How are you, Steven?
I'm doing pretty good, Jack.
Are you at MSG as we speak?
I am. I'm tucked away best I can in a little back corner of a hallway here trying to find a quiet spot. They've been moving some, I don't even know what they're moving, big carts or something, tables or something. It was really loud for a second. But, yeah, no, doing well. I love it here. This is one of those places that truly lives up to the hype, honestly. I mean, it's this, like Assembly Hall, I think, does, you know, the Horseshoe maybe. Not a lot of places, but this one definitely does.
Now, we talk about big games, and one thing Tom Izzo has been able to do for Michigan State is give them opportunities to play in these marquee games. When they get to the NCAA tournament, they have a tendency not to wet themselves. Occasionally that happens. But I'm looking at Kansas State, third seed, 15th ranked, Michigan State unranked, and yet Michigan State favored in this game. Do you think that for Kansas State, it's going to be a big shock to go from the Little Apple to the Big Apple, Manhattan?
Maybe. You know, it's an interesting deal. Like, when you look at them, they had two players left over from last year's roster, so it's almost an entirely new group. I mean, obviously they've had success to the tournament to this point, but this is a different deal. You know, this city, this stage and everything. So I'll be curious, too. It's not like they're a young team necessarily, but they're all put together this year, you know, and you know, at this point you hope that they probably have the chemistry and everything figured out. But I really don't know, I guess. I mean, playing in the Big 12, I think, prepares you pretty well. It's not the Garden, of course. And like you said, Michigan State has experience. They play in these arenas all the time with the Champions Classic and the Big Ten tournament and everything else. It's interesting. It is interesting that I think you mentioned MSU is being favored here. I don't know if that's more of a reflection of the first two games or if it's some sort of personnel thing that they're seeing there. I think it's going to be a good one tomorrow, and I'm curious to see, you know, if Michigan State can roll what it did last week and into this week, right? I mean, those were two of their best games, I think we can say, right? Two of their five.
Yes.
Maybe the two best, but definitely two of the five best games they've played all year. And so that's, you know, I was doing a Q&A with one of our Kansas State writers, and I was like, I still don't really fully trust this team, but if they can do a lot of what they did last weekend, then I give them more than a good shot to win this game.
Right. Well, I was listening to some of the pre-tournament analysis from our guests, and you said that you could see Michigan State making a run. I don't know if you invested your 401k on that, but I would say that Michigan State made a lot of bettors happy last week and opened as an underdog in this game, a 2-point underdog, and flipped that. That doesn't happen often that the line moves that much, but so many people betting Michigan State. And now I think there's some Kansas State big money coming in, so it's brought the spread down. I think the last I heard it was 1.5 Michigan State favored, but when you look at this region, Stephen, you've got the 3 and the 7, the 4 and the 9, and Michigan State is the only one of these four teams that is not ranked in the Associated Press poll, but no team in this region is ranked higher than 15th. So it really could go any way. I mean, Florida Atlantic, you're talking about a school with more than 30 wins, and you got Tennessee, which looked great until it lost twice to Kentucky. And Kansas State beat Kansas, but maybe that's not quite as impressive as we thought.
Right. No, I do think it's a winnable weekend again, you know, when you look at those teams. And there's not like, you know, all sort of the skeletons and the, you know, all the scary matchups got ousted, right? Like, you didn't necessarily probably want to see Kentucky again. Duke, obviously, is just a team nobody ever wants to see, you know, no matter what they look like. And obviously, Purdue getting knocked down. So, yeah, it appears to be an easier road. I think it is a winnable road for them. It's just, I just keep coming back to, you know, this team. I mean, we've seen it, Jack. As good as they played last weekend, part of me does feel like that, you know, 32% shooting game with 18 turnovers is always right around the corner. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they've turned that corner and then they do make it out of this weekend. But as much as I can flip back and forth, I can be convinced in either, because I do think what we saw last weekend was pretty real and obviously repeatable. But again, I have this fear that, like, that, you know, we've all seen it, the 2-for-12 start, 6 turnovers at the first media timeout type of thing, and they're going home, you know, if they have that type of game. But it does. They are playing. You got to tip your hat with how, you know, focused this team is right now, I think.
Yeah.
And all these veterans playing to their potential, to their strengths, giving them exactly what they need. I mean, all the way down the list, Joey Hauser doing exactly what they need from him on offense. Tyson Walker making the big shots, all the big plays. Malik Hall giving them a little bit of dirty work here and there. Jaden Akins, you know, being a secondary scorer and whatnot, and defending really well lately, too, I should say. Just on and on and on down the list. It's like everybody is hitting their stride at the right time. It's obviously what you want. And just, like I said, playing to their strengths, you know, within their roles, within their skills. And I think that is, you know, is one of those other things that really stood out about last weekend, that the experience. I thought the Marquette game, you know, that was an experience game, I thought.
Yeah.
And I thought it looked like the older kids versus the younger kids on the playground, and especially in those last couple minutes, the way they closed it. So, yeah, you know, back to your point, I don't think there's a scenario. You know, if Michigan State loses, I think it'll be because of themselves. You know, I think they'll play poorly, and that'll just be it. But I don't think there's a team here that's going to, like, that's unbeatable, A, or also, like, has some matchup or a player even, like, that's just going to be sure trouble for them. I don't see that. So I think it's, you know, it's all in Michigan State's hands, I think, which is where you want to be.
You know, Stephen, people will say, well, you know, Michigan State got a break, or the region is not tough. Can't really control where it was assigned, but as a 7 seed, it's going to play a 10. Took care of that. Then probably going to play a 2. Took care of that. And then the toughest road it could have after that is a 3, and that's what it has now. And then if it's not going to play the 1, the 4 is there. So Michigan State could wind up beating the 2, the 3, and the 4 in the region. The number 1 seed, Purdue, beat itself with a little help from FDU. But I think about the contributions, as you brought up, from so many different players, and I thought there were 9 of them who played significant roles, not the least of which was Matty Sissoko. And 8 points, I think he only dropped 1 ball. He had 10 rebounds, some of them man-sized. He had 2 terrific block shots, one which some people are still scrutinizing frame by frame, but he did about all that Tom Izzo could have hoped for in that game. And I looked at this as a case of what Michigan State's defensive intensity can bring, because in both of these games, they didn't shoot well. The first game, they were horrific at the line in the second half. And they probably lost 8 points down the stretch at the foul line. And then Sunday, you're 2-for-16 from 3, and I would say that had been Michigan State's strength for most of the year, with Joey Hauser and Tyson Walker, and they're shooting 12.5% from deep. They get outscored by 27 points, beyond the arc, and they still win by 9 over a second-seed, 6th-ranked Marquette team that won its conference regular season and the tournament. So it's not like Michigan State had played its best basketball and eventually, you know, the slipper's not going to fit anymore. It can play better than it did.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, that speaks to everything. When you just say, and, you know, you've made 2 threes and won an NCAA tournament game, you know, as the underdog, underseed and everything, for them to yeah, there's absolutely room for them to grow, I'd say, and put it all together. I mean, when you brought up Matty, like the bigs gave them, especially I thought the USC game, gave them a complete game. You know, none of the 3 are going to have a dominant full game effort probably, or even maybe an A minus type of game individually, but if they all combine for 1, which I think we saw in that USC game, for the most part, then you're good. You know, I mean, they're not going to, you know, the position of weakness isn't going to become a strength overnight here. Like, that's, you know, it kind of is what it is at this point. But if combined, they can get a good game, you know, out of that position with just everybody doing, you know, a B minus, B plus type, you know, B minus B type of level, then you're good. You know, you can't expect much more than that, I don't think. But like that first game, with what Mahdi did, and then Jackson only played like that first stint, but he hit a bucket right at a really crucial time where USC had scored like six in a row or whatever and just sort of stemmed the tide. And then Carson Cooper, you know, had his moment there with a couple of dunks and really shored up their ball screen defense. So he's one of those guys that you really, I think, keep an eye on going into next year. It's like, man, how much further can he take it in another year in this program with just the strides he's made this season? So, yeah, it's a team that can definitely play better, as you said. And I think it's interesting, too, talking about, you know, yesterday in East Lansing and even a little bit today, just the idea of how battle-hardened they are. You know, I mean, the Iowa loss in the moment felt so deflating, you know. And I was talking to my friend last night, who I'm staying with out here, actually, and just two games, you know, has changed the perception of this team wildly. And I get it. I mean, that's what this time of year is for. But if they don't, without these two wins, you know, what are we saying about this team? They were underachievers, you know, no true star, not a high ceiling, you know, just sort of let the program down. And now just two wins out of 32 or whatever, 32, 33 games, two wins now has completely shifted the mood. Now that they're sort of this beloved, plucky team, and they've restored the program's pride. And, you know, it's crazy how just two games can massively influence how a team's thought of and remembered and everything. And, again, I just go back to, you know, seeing them, to me, play their best ball at this point in the season has a lot to do with that, too. It's not just the wins. I mean, but I think it's seeing some of those things that we saw in pieces all season coming together, and then obviously resulting in the wins. And so, yeah, everybody loves the team now, and you know, I'm giving them a decent shot to keep on going here.
Stephen, this team was unranked at the start of the season, and it is unranked now. It is one of three teams in the Sweet 16 that did not receive a single vote in the final AP regular season poll, Michigan State, Arkansas, and Princeton. And Michigan State could be one of the very few teams, or checking the number, in NCAA history to be unranked and make the Final Four. And you'd have to go back, I don't know about Jim Valvano in 1983. I guarantee you, every team since then, even Villanova in 85, was got some votes, was ranked when it won the national title. So Michigan State is in position to do something that hasn't been done in more than close to 40 years, I would say. But I have been saying for 2 years that Tyson Walker is this team's best offensive player. And he made a billion tough shots, it seemed like, the other night. Closely contested shots, drives to the basket. And he took 17 shots. Rob, I've been saying he needs to take 15 shots every game. And if he doesn't shoot the ball, Izzo should admonish him. But what kind of odds do you think we could have gotten, Stephen, that Tyson Walker would have more dunks than threes, considering he hadn't had any dunks in his career?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what, plus 10,000 on the old app there? more than that, plus 15, you know, a lot. First ever dunk, he told me, in any competitive real game, you know, not like the playground or the gym or whatever, but like any game at any level of his life, he's never dunked in a game until then. So, and I shot some video of him at the open practice. He was, you know, he was getting up there doing all kinds of impressive stuff. And I put that out on Twitter, and a lot of people like were screenshotting and replying to me like, look at Tyson, or, oh my God, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know he could do that. What the heck? Why haven't we seen that? And then sure enough, you know, a couple of days later, that he puts the exclamation point on it. So, yeah, I mean, what I keep coming back to with him is just, like, what an asset he is. When you look at both those games, you know, the big shot taking and making, obviously, you know, that's key. And they really haven't had a guy like that, you know, since Cassius probably. So that's key. And, then, you know, now that you see it, you sort of see what they were missing at certain points, too. Mm-hmm. But also just when I say an asset, like both of those games, obviously, he had to slide over and play point guard. And then, you know, in the Marquette game, he steadies the ship. In the USC game, he takes it over and they stretch the lead out, and that's when he fed Cooper there, and that's when he had those dunks and everything. Nice stretch there. They don't really, in the Marquette game, it was more just sort of steadying the waters. And then he can shift back into his normal role and close the game out as your go-to scorer or closer. I mean, the way he can morph between those two incredibly important roles in the most pivotal time of the season, I mean, you can't say enough about that. So it's interesting. You know, he's leaving a heck of a legacy here. Joey Hauser obviously has rewritten his legacy, and we'll see. I mean, there's more to come, I think, at least the opportunity for that. But, yeah, Tyson is it's been really fun to see what he's become. And you were saying he's the best player for 2 years now, and you know, a lot of people weren't saying many good things about Joey Hauser last year and even right. early in this year, and now he's completely changed the perception of him. So it's that plays into to what I was just saying about, you know, this team becoming really likable. I think it was so frustrating for people. It was the overwhelming sort of takeaway I got, you know, in January and February. People were just frustrated because it was never consistent, you know, it didn't always look pretty. But now all of a sudden, you know, like the Joey Hauser redemption story, and Tyson's, you know, sort of this mighty small guy, you know, leading the charge and everything. Just there's a whole lot of likable aspects all of a sudden with this team.
The problem, I think, Stephen, when this team was struggling, and I wouldn't even say this was true in the loss to Iowa. I just think that was a bizarre set of circumstances. It's like watching someone roll, you know, craps 12 times or something in a row. But I think when the team is struggling, it's been tentative and passive. And when it is aggressive, when it goes to the basket instead of just doing dribble handoffs and shooting with 5 seconds to go in the possession, when it is attacking on defense and pressuring and risking fouls, which is dangerous for this team, but nonetheless, delivering the blows instead of receiving them, it's totally different. I think about A.J. Hogard, and the first time down the court Sunday, he gets picked, and 2-0, and I've seen Tom Izzo sometimes in a case like this where he's had a quick hook, but he didn't. And here comes A.J. down with a perfect drop-down pass for a Sissoko dunk. Then he comes back and he hits a shot, hits a three. And then, or he comes back and hits a long jumper. And then he goes to the basket, and he just made up for it with about 7 points in short time. So I think that, you know, he can still do more. The guy they have to get going, and if they can get him back to anything close to his potential, Michigan State can win the championship. That's Malik Hall.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know how realistic that is, though. It's, you know, there's times out there, and some of those, he actually had good moments, but some of those first two games, I was like, oh man, they might have to get him out of here because he just, you know, he steps slow. He's just not. Yeah. He's not always moving the best. He's still good enough to give you, you know, some spot minutes and come up with a big rebound like we saw, or a tip out, or deflect a pass, or get his hands on a pass and everything. But I agree with you. I think he gave the best version of Malik Hall, and oh my gosh, watch out! And you know, I might even call him a favorite to get out of this weekend. But I just don't think that it doesn't seem very feasible with this year. So you kind of hope you get whatever you can out of him. I thought you were going to say Jaden Akins, you know, and he's got to return to being that scorer that we saw later in the season, that shooter. That'll help. And yeah, like you said, I mean, that I think that's another sign of their experience paying off, you know, and there's sort of their veteran craftiness when how they found all the other ways to do what they had to do when three ball wasn't falling, and how reliant they were on that down the stretch of the season. The other night when it's not falling, they, you know, they did get to the basket, they did use other things and find ways to just manufacture it, you know, and that's a sign of a veteran team that's been through a lot of different situations, and good and bad, you know, all the way back to Gonzaga, and then just everything that's happened since then, the Purdue home game, the Iowa home game, the Iowa road game, you know, on. They've seen so many scenarios that, as I think I mentioned up top, they are battle-tested, truly, at this point.
The double overtime game with Kentucky is another one, which, I mean, you went through like three different game experiences in that one in Indianapolis. Stephen, this might be a rabbit hole. I don't know if we should go down it or not, but I'm looking at this team thinking what it might look like next year.
And, it's dangerous.
There's basketball to be played, but do you think that how this season ends – will determine what Malik Hall wants to do, or do you think it'll be based on other considerations?
I would think so. I mean, there's no way it can't play into it, right? I mean, you just look at what happened with Joey last year. I mean, from my vantage point, like, I don't know how I would have, you know, trying to put myself in their shoes, like, yeah, absolutely it would. If you feel like you're on the cusp of something, or if you get there and fall just short, then yeah. I don't know everyone's motivations and experiences, and, you know, do they all love school? Do they love being here, you know, deep down? I mean, I don't know all those things, but I would think if you get that close, and you see, you know, what if they're able to get that close, then yeah, I would think that has an effect, and it is, you know, it's dangerous, especially this day and age, obviously looking too far forward, but it does get really intriguing when you think about him and Tyson coming back, yeah. If you know, if that were to happen, and then it's, you know, it quickly turns to, like, you have too many pieces, and how does everybody, you know, how do you keep everybody happy, and everybody gets, you know, everybody gets their shots and their minutes and everything. Mm-hmm. With the freshman class coming in, and that would be, you know, Tom Izzo's had that problem before, you know, so it wouldn't be new, yeah, for him. It'd be very interesting to see how it all plays out. But when you look at it and you do that daydreaming, like, that is exactly how you want to be built today. When you look at, like, the high-level young talent that they'd be bringing in with, right, you know, some of those guys with pro potential, very high ceilings, and then the seasoned veteran core that can, you know, kind of hold their hand along the way. That maybe doesn't have the highest upside or the most talent, but has been there, done that, and is, you know, just really good college players. So that's the ideal mix. If they can get that all together and bring back one or both of Malik and Tyson, then, yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a good problem to have trying to fit that all together. But they'll be no lower than number three in the preseason, I can guarantee you, than if both of them come back.
Yeah, I think back to when Michigan State went to the three straight Final Fours and won the championship, Stephen. And in 2000, their most gifted player was not Mateen Cleaves, and it wasn't Morris Peterson. It was Jason Richardson, and he didn't start. And, you know, he only stuck around 2 years, but he was a valuable addition to that team. Then you think about the next year, and Zach Randolph, you're talking about another, you know, top first-round draft pick, and he doesn't start. He waits behind Andre Hudson. He didn't stick around very long, but, you know, JR had to wait behind Charlie Bell. He didn't unseat A.J. Granger. So I don't think that these guys are going to come in next year. And I know that Izzo hasn't told them you're going to come in and start. They're going to have to wait. They're going to have to learn. And they know that about this program. And if that's not what they want to do, they picked the wrong program. So yeah. I'm wondering what percent chance you might give Malik Hall of returning, 0 to 100.
Strictly, like I said, my opinion, everything, not anything, yep, I've heard from him, yep, or anybody close.
Just your
to
gut.
It,
but, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 80-90. I mean, I think, ooh, he hasn't had the senior season that he wanted. I think everything we just talked about with how good next year's team could be. I mean, what's he going to be leaving to, like, stock-wise right now as a pro? I mean, I'm sure he could get a contract, yeah, of course, somewhere, and somebody will pay him to play basketball, but he's, yeah, not necessarily leaving on an uptick, you know, and I'm sure he realizes that. And as, right, long as he's happy, I would think he's going to be back next year and sort of, you know, get a clean slate redo of this final season. That's what I would think, but that's just sort of my logic, my gut, my feel of it, but it's not anything that I've heard or, sure, by, sure, anybody at all.
Yeah. Same thing, your gut reaction percentage chance for Tyson Walker.
See, that one's tougher because Tyson, as you know, is a hard guy to read, doesn't give you a lot. So,
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, 49% maybe, okay, I think is kind of where I'm at. I think, okay, obviously just his head under a coin flip. I didn't think there was much of a chance early, but lately, yeah, I'm starting to think maybe there will be. The, yeah, senior day thing where Izzo did the one more year chant, like, yeah, man, I don't know if he necessarily does that, if he doesn't think there's a shot there. But also, you know, when you talk about Malik not leaving on an uptick, Tyson, yeah, would be, you know, if he really wants to, yeah, strike while the iron's hot. I don't think he's an NBA prospect, but he's going to leave with his name, you know, in a really good place. So
can he make more a name, image, and likeness now with the popularity and the opportunities that might present for him than he could in the G League?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I don't know what he's making now. I don't think it's as much as people probably think. Actually, you know, based on a couple things I've heard, So I do think they might would I think it would serve Miskus well to make sure he's taken care of there and everything. But I'm sure people would be happy to. I mean, you look at after the Peach Bowl, all the things that Peyton Thorne was doing for that next 6 months or so. If he announced the day after the season, "Hey, I'm coming back to win a national title," I think Tyson Walker could, you know, have that exact same sort of effect and, you know, do pretty well for himself. You could see him on all sorts of endorsements and commercials or whatever. And, yeah, and, you know, have a chance for himself to really carve out a special legacy if he were to do that and if he were able to deliver, at least just get him to a Final Four, you know, or if he does that this year. So, yeah, absolutely more than the G League for sure, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I could see some deal where they bring back K-9 and Kenneth Walker and Tyson Walker do a commercial for Playmakers with their Brooks Addiction Walker shoe that's so popular. I mean, there's so many different possibilities. I know that he's doing well enough, Stephen, that Tom Izzo, I think he talked about this yesterday, demanded that Tyson Walker get him some pizza and a cab ride in Manhattan. He said he's paying for it out of his NIL money. And what happened last night? Did you see the video of the delivery?
I did. That was incredible.
Yeah.
Good
I mean, I don't know. Does Izzo tip Tyson Walker for the pizza? Is he allowed to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm sure you've probably been out to dinner with him or something. You would know what type of tipper he is. So hopefully he takes care of business there. I didn't see anything exchanged, but you know, I would think so. But yeah, that doesn't maybe get into a gray area there. Who knows? But at this point, you know, just do it, and that's the new. Those are the rules now. Just do it, and ask for forgiveness. Don't ask for permission first.
So did you give me a number on Tyson?
Yeah, 49.
49. Okay. So is it more likely that next year in a Michigan State uniform we will see Tyson Walker or your second cousin, Pierre?
Oh, definitely Tyson. I don't – at this point it's pretty hard to picture Pierre being back with them. I mean, again, nothing that I've heard, but just, you know, observing and knowing how these things work now – yeah, I mean, he hasn't played at all in either NCAA tournament game, and obviously things have been trending that way, and just hasn't really broken out to, you know, broken into the lineup, I guess I should say, and carved out that role for himself. So if he enjoys it here and everything, then yeah. But I mean, if his goal is to get on the floor and make something out of this time, then I have a real hard time seeing him in a uniform here next year.
He's been given lots of chances to come in and hit shots, and late in the season and in the Big Ten tournament, lost to Ohio State. Pierre Brooks got into the game, but you saw him this summer at Moneyball, and he was sensational. I think he averaged more than 40 points, but again, let me say for the 38,000th time, it is Moneyball, okay? So my understanding is he was 223 pounds this summer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he is now?
I 10 more than that, you know, 10 to 12 more, maybe around there.
I heard he's topping 250.
Ooh. Well, yeah. So from what I understand, the Christmas break, did not go particularly well. I believe it was there. And so that
was like swallowing a bowling ball. He came back 9 pounds heavier.
Yeah. And so, that's sort of an important marker on the timeline for all of this. That's interesting because, these guys work out so much. Like, they're running up and down in practice all day. It seems hard to put that much on and keep it on. But as you said, he's gotten his opportunity, but he just hasn't made shots, and it's no fault of his necessarily. I mean, he's not trying to miss them, but when he's gotten that opportunity in some of those windows, and he's gotten good looks, when he was playing, just not falling for him. So you do feel for the kid there because, I mean, that's not work ethic. That's not this or that. Like, that's what he's there to do, and it's just not, he's in a heck of a slump. So there's other things, apparently, that Izzo has seemed to sort of suggest and hint that in terms of, he usually says it like not doing all the things you need to do or something. So however you interpret that, but it's more than just the missed shots in the games that we see as well. So right. You add it all up, you look at, you know, the context, the body language, the numbers, the play, everything, and it all leads in a pretty obvious direction, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I like Pierre. He's a good kid.
Yeah.
It's just that when you're playing in the Michigan State program, it's not easy. It's sacrifice. And if you're not prepared to make those sacrifices, sometimes you get left by the wayside. Before we let you go, Stephen, I need your projections coming out of these four regions. In the South, number one Alabama versus number five San Diego State, and number 15 Princeton versus number six Creighton. Who makes it to Houston?
Give me Alabama out of there. I mean, at this point, the way they're rolling, I thought maybe that their youth or their sort of reliance on shooting would catch up with them, but it hasn't, and they've just been crushing people. So Brandon Miller's still, I think, the best guy, the best individual player left in the tournament. So, give me Bama.
And Bama can win convincingly when Miller's 5-for-18 from the field. In the Midwest, we have number one Houston and number five Miami, a team that Indiana never wants to see again. And number two, Texas, number three, Xavier. The 1-5-2-3, who comes out?
I guess I'll take a flyer on Miami, sure. I don't really love any of those teams. Maybe Texas, but don't really trust them fully. I'll take a flyer on Miami.
All right. And in the West, 8-seeded Arkansas, 4-seeded UConn, and then the best matchup of the next round, 2nd-seeded UCLA and number 3, Gonzaga.
That's hard. I really wanted to like UCLA coming into the tournament. And then they had those injuries, lost the defensive player of the year kid. I forget his name, Clark maybe, but whatever. Yep. Give me UConn, I guess. It feels a little safe. I know they're a really popular Final Four pick, but I guess give me them.
Yeah, I thought UConn was the best team in the country in the first month. And then ran into some things, but they may be rounding back into form. That takes us to the East. And 9th-seeded FAU against Tennessee in the nightcap tomorrow. And 7th-seeded Michigan State and 3-seed Kansas State, who comes out of the East.
I guess I'll say Kansas State. I could definitely see Michigan State, but like I said earlier, I still can't fully trust this team, even though I probably should, and they are the more experienced team. They've been together longer. Izzo's, you know, by far, you know, the coaching matchup is completely one-sided. Not that Jerome Tang's not a good coach, but just Izzo is doing laps around him in terms of experience and what he's seen in this tournament. So I'll probably look like a fool, but I have this weird feeling that clunker game's right around the corner for Michigan State. So give me Kansas State.
Okay, so you have a 1, a 5, a 4, and a 3. So that's a pretty good spread there of teams you have advancing to NRG Stadium. Stephen, I will see you tomorrow at Madison Square Garden. I'm getting in mid-morning and won't be long, and we'll all be over there watching Michigan State as the first game in the Sweet 16.
Excellent. Safe travels, Jack. I'll see you soon.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.